A New Lease of Death by Ruth Rendell. Retold by John Escott. Published by Macmillan Education, a division of Macmillan Publishers Limited, 2012. Chapter 1. He was hanged. It was 5 o'clock in the morning, and Detective Inspector Mike Burden was standing by the window of Chief Inspector Wexford's office. Outside in the corridor, Burden could hear Wexford saying good night, or good morning, to Mr. Griswold, the Chief Constable. Minutes later, he saw Griswold's car drive away. Burden turned round when Wexford came into the room. The Chief Inspector was a big, powerful-looking man with a loud voice. He was tired, and his heavy grey face looked a little greyer than usual after the long night. "Griswold's just given me this," said Wexford, sitting down in a chair. He showed Burden an envelope. "It's a letter he received from the Reverend Archery." Then Wexford took a letter from the envelope and unfolded it. "All Griswold told me was that this Archery is a good friend of his, and the letter is about that terrible man Painter. I'll have to answer it." "Who's Painter?" asked Burden. "He was a murderer who was hanged 15 or 16 years ago, Wexford replied. Burden looked over the Chief Inspector's shoulder as he read the letter aloud. "Dear Sir, you will remember the case of Herbert Arthur Painter. I understand that you were in charge of it, so I decided to come to you before making my inquiries." "What does he mean, inquiries?" said Burden. "I don't know," said Wexford. "He's going to phone me this morning. It was the first murder case I ever investigated on my own," he went on angrily. "There's no mystery. Herbert Arthur Painter killed his 90-year-old employer by hitting her over the head with an axe. He did it for £200. "She was killed in her own home, wasn't she?" said Burden. "One of those big old houses off the Stourton Road." "It's called Victor's Peace," said Wexford. "I think I know it. It was an old people's home until last year. It's very run down now. I suppose it will be pulled down." Burden tried to remember the murdered woman's name, but couldn't. "What was she called?" he asked. "Rose Isabel Primero," said Wexford. "When she was a child, she lived at Forby Hall. Her family had owned the place for hundreds of years." Burden knew Forby well. "Perhaps Archery is her relative," he said. "I don't think so," said Wexford. "The only relatives old Rose Primero had were her 3 grandchildren. Roger Primero, her grandson, lives at Forby Hall now, but he didn't inherit it. He had to buy it." "There was a family called Nyaston at Forby Hall," said Burden, "but that was many years ago." "That's right," said Wexford. "Mrs. Primero was born a Nyaston. She was nearly 40 when she married Dr. Ralph Primero. They came to live at Victor's Peace when he retired. They weren't rich. When the doctor died in the 1930s, Mrs. Primero was left with only about £10,000. There was one child, a son, but he died soon after his father." "Was Rose Primero really still living alone when she died?" asked Burden, "even at such an old age?" "She had a maid," said Wexford, "Alice Flower. She's still alive. She was about 70 when Mrs. Primero was killed. Alice had been with her for 50 years. She and Painter were both Mrs. Primero's servants, but Alice sometimes gave him his orders." "Was Alice frightened of Painter?" asked Burden. "She hated him," said Wexford. "He was employed by Mrs. Primero as a driver and gardener. After the doctor died, Mrs. Primero and Alice Flower tried to manage without help. But by 1947, Mrs. Primero was in her 80s, and Alice was nearly 70. Also, the old lady never did anything. It was all left to Alice. Mrs. Primero wasn't an easy person to work for." "Or to like," said Burden. "Probably not," said Wexford. "When she was too old to go to church, she made Alice go instead. Made her. When her son died, he left his wife and kids without much money. Mrs. Primero said that she was happy to help them, but only if they came to live with her. But she loved her grandson, Roger, and she had one good friend. I'll tell you about her later. There was a garage with a large room over the top of it in the Gardens of Victor's Peace, Wexford went on. Mrs. Primero put an advertisement in the King's Markham Chronicle for a young man to work in the garden and drive the car. He could live in the flat above the garage. Mrs. Primero had the room divided into three rooms. A lot of people answered the advertisement, but she chose Painter for the job. Was his wife employed by Mrs. Primero too? Asked Burden. No, only Painter. The child, her name was Teresa, I think, was only 2 years old. Mrs. Primero didn't want her in the house with her mother. Not a nice woman, said Burden. What about Mrs. Painter? Well, she was very pretty and quite small. She was a bit afraid of her husband. So Mrs. Primero and her maid lived alone at Victor's Peace, said Burden. Yes, said Wexford. The garage was about 30 yards from the back door of the big house. Painter only went up to the house to carry in the coal and get his orders. Oh, yes, the coal, said Burden. Wasn't there something important about that? Painter was supposed to cut wood and to carry coal up to the house at midday and again at 6:30 in the evening. He always complained about it because he didn't like going out to get it on winter evenings. He wanted to bring all the coal for the day at 11 o'clock in the morning, but Mrs. Primero wouldn't let him do that. She wanted him to bring some in the morning and some in the evening. Do you want me to go on? Burden nodded. By September 1950, said Wexford, Painter had been working for Mrs. Primero for 3 years. But he was always asking her for more money. He knew that she kept money in the house. And an old handbag containing the £200, said Burden. Yes, said Wexford. It happened on the evening of September the 24th, a cold, wet Sunday. Mrs. Primero had sent Alice to church. She left at about 6:15. Painter brought the coal in at 6:30 and left with £200. Mrs. Primero was found at 7 o'clock. She was lying on the living room floor near the fireplace in a great pool of blood. There was blood on the walls and on her chair, and there was an axe in the fireplace. It too was covered in blood. Suddenly the phone rang, and Wexford stopped to pick up the receiver. When he had finished listening, he said, "Archery's coming at 2 o'clock." "What's it all about? Did he say?" asked Burden. "He'll tell us this afternoon," said Wexford. "I've got to go out, but I'll meet you for lunch at the Olive and Dove Hotel." It was just before 1 o'clock when Burden arrived at the hotel. Wexford came in 5 minutes later. They talked over lunch. "Mrs. Primero died without making a will," said Wexford. "Remember I told you that she'd only got £10,000? That was divided between Roger and his two younger sisters. He's a rich man now, but he didn't get his money from his grandmother. He's a businessman." "How old is he?" asked Burden. "He was 22 when his grandmother was killed, which means he must be about 38 now. The sisters were younger. Angela was 10 and Isabel was 9. "Roger spoke at the trial, I remember," said Burden. "Roger visited his grandmother that Sunday," Wexford said. "He was working in a solicitor's office in Sowingbury and often had Sunday tea at Victor's Peace. Roger took his little sisters there a few times, and they were all very happy together." "Old people usually like kids," said Burden. "They had to be the right sort of children. Angela and Isabel, yes, and she liked young Elizabeth Krilling." Burden stared at him. "Elizabeth Krilling? Don't you remember? Elizabeth, who was 5 years old at the time, found Mrs. Primero's body," said Wexford. "She didn't come to the trial because she was too young." "No, I don't remember. I'd only just left school," said Burden. "But I don't understand." You said Mrs. Primero only liked the right sort of children. She thought Elizabeth Krilling was the right sort of child. Elizabeth, who is now always in trouble with the police. Her mother's half crazy, and they live in Glebe Road. Glebe Road was in one of the poorer, rougher parts of the town. They have no money. How could Mrs. Primero have known them? In September 1950, Mr. Krilling was still alive, and the Krillings lived opposite Victor's Peace, said Wexford. Mrs. Krilling was about 30 and not half crazy at the time. A woman called Mrs. White lived next door to her. Burden remembered the two small white houses in the lane. But that means Mrs. Krilling isn't 50 yet, he said. Well, she looks much older. Mental illness always makes a woman look much older, said Wexford. Mrs. Krilling has been in and out of mental hospitals for years. He looked at his watch. It was 1:45 p.m. How did Mrs. Primero and the Krilling woman become friends? Asked Burden. I suppose they were friends. Oh, yes, said Wexford. Mr. Krilling had been an accountant, which, in Mrs. Primero's opinion, made his wife a lady. Mrs. Krilling often visited Victor's Peace, and she always took Elizabeth with her. The child called Mrs. Primero Granny Rose, like Roger and his sisters. So she visited that Sunday night and found Granny Rose dead, said Burden. Mrs. Krilling had made a party dress for Elizabeth, explained Wexford. She finished it at about 6 o'clock. The child put it on, and they went to show it to Mrs. Primero. Mrs. Krilling waited until Alice had left for church, because Alice didn't like her. It was about 6:20, Wexford went on. But Mrs. Primero was asleep, and Mrs. Krilling didn't go in. She just knocked on the living room window. When the old woman didn't wake up, she went away and returned later. Importantly, she noticed that there was no coal in the fireplace, so she knew that Painter hadn't been in. So Painter came in and killed the old woman between Mrs. Krilling's visits, said Burden. She and the child didn't go back until 7 o'clock, replied Wexford. They went in by the back door, called hello or something, and walked on into the living room. Elizabeth went in first. And saw the body, said Burden. Terrible. So what's Archery's connection with all this? We shall soon know, said Wexford.